there is this question in the sales world that like inspires so much debate. I mean, short of a freaking fist fight. And the question is, what's the best channel to embrace when we're prospecting? Is it the phone? Is it email? Is it LinkedIn? Is it like face to face? Is it networking? Today, we're going to dive head first into that argument. My name is Paul Castain from Castain Training Systems, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. So it's funny, if you ever want to see like a group of salespeople like go into riot mode, ask the question, what is the best channel to use when you're prospecting? Now, you're going to have a lot of like the hardcore folks tell you, they will swear by it, that the phone is like the absolute way to go. In fact, like to many of those types, if you can't use the phone, you don't belong in sales. There's other people who swear by like email, that it does it for them. And then you have people out there who swear by LinkedIn and all the social selling stuff. I know people who've done very, very well, and they absolutely like swear. Like when I say swear, like they curse by it. Like they say really bad curse words by like things like traditional face-to-face networking. And to kind of like, I mean, like, I'm not even going to say spoiler alert, because if you guys have been following me for a while, you know that like I'm the guy in the crowd that says like, why are we fighting about this? Like, who, like it doesn't really matter which one is the best one, because it's really subjective. And when we're trying to find what the best one is, I think more often than not, we just kind of get rid of everything else based on our very subjective opinion towards something. So my approach is this, right? Now, many of you are going to say, okay, I've got my answer. I can shut off the podcast. But I'm just going to like flip all the cards and like tell you what my opinion is. And then I'm going to give you six solid reasons why I believe this is the best way to go. So I'm not just sitting here giving you a bunch of philosophical. So this is what I think it is. But my feeling is that we need to embrace a multi-channel prospecting approach. All right. Now, again, if you've been following me for a while, there's no shock there. I've been saying this for no less than 10 years on my blog. I mean, if you go back to some of the early stuff that I was like writing, I think I wrote something like the importance of having a sales mix. And I talk about, I think that goes back to like 2009, 2010, that particular one. But I've been saying it all along. But I want to get into why. And I'm hoping right now that what you do is like you embrace that like humble student mentality, where you kind of lose your ego and like all your preconceived notions and just like hear me out and understand why. Because for far too many of you listening to this, you're only like embracing either like the phone and or email. So let me give you my reasons why a multi-channel approach is a much better way to go. So the first thing is, it's a selfish reason. I want to appeal to your inner selfish prick right now. Like seriously, I want to be selfish. I want you to get selfish. Quite selfishly, we do a lot better with just like not doing like one thing in sales. We are not wired to do one thing. So what you're doing right now, it might not excite you in terms of like hunting for new business, because you might be embracing just the phone or just email or maybe both of those things. So what happens when you have something that you know you're supposed to do, but it just doesn't excite you? What do? You avoid it, or you do a series of like half measures. Like you don't go all in. You just kind of go through the motions of it, because your boss tells you got a prospect and they're checking the CRM to make sure that you're doing what you're supposed to do. Or like if you're on a team like I was on, you might have like software to like check how many outbound calls you've been making. So you kind of go through the motions. But also, if you have something that scares you, and for a lot of people, the phone scares the hell out of them. or if you have something that like makes you uncomfortable. Maybe scare is like a really strong word for some of you guys, but maybe it just makes you uncomfortable. You're not scared of it, but it just makes you uncomfortable. What do you do with things that either scare you or make you uncomfortable? Well, guess what? You avoid them. And if like you kind of have to do it and you know you have to do it, what do you do? Just like before, you do a series of half measures. You go through the motions. You want to be able to check a box and say, I did that. So now what happens is when you're really not excited about like a form of prospecting, that leads to like, and if we all know that we're like, say, avoiding it at some level, well, then that leads to inconsistent prospecting. And that really leads to other problems. So let's talk about some of those problems that that leads to, because like you're either scared of it or like, you know, you're uncomfortable with it, or at a minimum, you're not excited about it. Number one, when you're inconsistently prospecting, potential clients really don't know who you are. Would you agree with that? And I always give like that stupid example. Right here on the podcast, I've used it probably, like if you've been following me, probably what, like 50 times? The one where like, imagine somebody's trying to have a relationship with you and they show up and like, you know, they're here, they're trying to have a relationship with you, and then they disappear for 6 weeks, and then they come back for a few days and they're trying to have a relationship with you, and then they disappear for 3 months and they come back and they're trying to have a relationship with you, and then they disappear for, I don't know, like 7 weeks, and then they come back for like a week or two, hot and heavy, trying to have a relationship with you. I mean, like would there be like any kind of trust with that person? Like, do you think that relationship could ever really get off the ground? And that's what happens with you and a lot of your potential clients. But at a minimum, when you're avoiding prospecting for whatever reason, we said either it's a matter of it's not, that form of prospecting is not exciting you, or maybe you're scared or uncomfortable in doing it, you know, you're not developing your hunting muscles. So like, you never get a chance to get stronger at it. I mean, the same thing goes for the gym, right? I mean, you're not working a muscle because you take all this time off, and then you come back for a few days and you're trying to work your legs. Your legs are going to cramp up. They're not going to be as strong, right? Same thing with your biceps, right? I mean, we can go on and on and on. So that's like the first reason why I really believe that a multi-channel prospecting approach is good, because you are not wired to do one particular thing. And I found that with a lot of the sales reps that I've been coaching and that have been through my training programs, that when we provide them with a multi-channel plan, and you guys know what I mean by that, right? I just want to make sure that we're all learning from the same perspective. When I say multi-channel, I don't mean like just phone or just email. I mean like phone, email, snail mail, LinkedIn, face-to-face networking, using creative approaches, you know, working warm intros and referrals, using a content approach like I'm doing right now through this podcast. So like a lot of different things. So that's what I mean by that. Now, the second reason why I believe that a multi-channel prospecting approach is important and essential is because there's less noise when you move beyond the phone and email. Think about it. Could you think of like two noisier channels than phone and email? Now, right about now, if I were having this in like a public forum, if I was saying this like on LinkedIn in a group, there's always like at least two assholes in the crowd that have to come out and say, okay, so you're saying that like we shouldn't make phone calls? Like when did I say that? My philosophy is this. I don't think cold calls are dead. I never have believed that like cold calls are dead. I just think they're lonely and they need companionship from other approaches in this multi-channel approach. So don't use this like argument that I'm making about multi-channel and like misinterpret it into me saying that, oh wow, you know, like the phone isn't effective, or screw email. I mean, if you guys have been paying attention to me for a while, you'll notice that I've done quite a few webinars and courses that utilize the phone and email. I was just thinking about Harold and Kumar. That would make me a hypocriticizer. Remember that when they were imitating, they had that guy, George Bush. Anyway, the guy imitating him anyway, but I digress. So the second reason is that there is less noise when you move beyond the phone and email. And I don't know about you, but like, I like communicating in environments where I have less noise. And I know that it must appeal to you on some level. And here's why. And this is where, like, I tricked you completely. It's like, oh my God, that son of a bitch Castain tricked me. Because you're listening to me right now on my podcast. And I know that appeals to you because chances are it's probably just me and you right now in your car. And there's less noise. You know how I know there's less noise? Because you're probably not listening to this podcast at the same time as like seven other podcasts. You're listening to mine. Or if I'm not in the car with you right now, like I'm in the earbuds, man. Like I'm in your head. Like how cool is that? So it's something that I want you to think about. Remember, before I go on to the third reason, nobody is saying ditch the phone or ditch the email. I'm not even saying like if your thing is like LinkedIn. I'm not saying ditch LinkedIn. If your thing is networking, I'm not saying ditch networking. I'm saying there's a whole world beyond that. Let's move on to the third one. Here's another thing, and you can call it a like Uncle Paulism, if you will. Everyone has their preferred communication channel. Let me say it again. Everyone has their preferred communication channel. And when you are clinging too tightly to any one of them, you miss out on people who have a different communication channel that they prefer. I mean, for some people, it's going to be LinkedIn. Now, if you're only hitting them up on the phone, or you're only like maybe stopping by or trying something creative, but meanwhile, man, they're all over LinkedIn, and that's where you're going to get them. That's where they love to be. Well, then you lose. But, you know, it's the same thing. For phone, it's the same thing. There's people out there who prefer Facebook. There's people out there who prefer email, right? So they also, it's not just a matter of what they prefer. Sometimes there's just channels and approaches that resonate with them more. For example, there's some people that snail mail, it resonates with them. Now, that's why I said resonates and not in this case their preferred channel, because that's kind of like a hard way for us to communicate, right? I mean, it's not like, you know, it's 1840 and I have to send like a letter cross country, you know, Pony Express or something like that. And it's take months to get there. And that's how we're going to have our communication. No, right? So we're not saying that. But what we are saying is that there are some people that like when they get a card or whatever, it's going to resonate with them, that they like it. They consider it kind of a lost kind of art, that whole handwritten thing or whatever it is. Now, there's other people where the thing that's going to resonate with them, and again, I wouldn't say that it's like a preferred venue of communication, but it's more something that's going to resonate with them. For some people, it's going to be networking and trade shows. Other people, it's content. Again, case in point, you're listening to this right now. So I have an opportunity to bond with you and demonstrate my expertise. For other people, creative things, because they just have that. They just, creative things appeal to them. Maybe they're creative. Maybe they wish they were creative, and that's why things that are creative, like, just really resonate with them. For other people, they might be all about their network. So the things that resonate with them are going to be like a warm intro or a referral. But the thing that I see and that I hear a lot that really disturbs me, because it's one thing that I really wish I could say in the last 10 years that I've been blogging, and, you know, it's probably what, it's going to be 9 years in May that I'm podcasting. I really wish I could say that this has gone way down. It hasn't, man. I've seen just as much, if not more. But I always hear people use these phrases that begin with, I prefer. So many times, like when we're having the discussion that we're having right now about like what's the best like channel to use or the best platform for prospecting, you'll hear people say things like, I prefer the phone, or I prefer LinkedIn, I prefer Facebook, I prefer face-to-face. And my position on that is, who cares? Nobody cares what you think when it comes to that. And I know that's a nasty statement to make. Please know that, like, I care, because, like, here, I'm your kind of unofficial coach. Of course I care, right? I don't mean that in a cold, like, shitty way. But do you really think, I mean, seriously, like, and by the way, before I ask this question, absolutely pull a car over right now, open up the passenger door, and tell your ego to get the hell out of the car, because there is no way you're going to get this message if your ego is like right there with you, like, don't listen to that bold fat bastard, right? It's not going to work. So right now, like, ego, leave. You got to go. I'll wait. I'll give you a few minutes. Like, I'll count a few Mississippis. Like, I'll be a little playing tag. But seriously, it's like, you know, do you really think that your potential clients are sitting around right now saying, you know, I'm thinking about preferring LinkedIn, but I wonder if that person who's trying to sell me something also prefers LinkedIn. You know, I think I might prefer face-to-face, but, you know, I wonder if salespeople prefer that. Do you think they really give a shit? No, they show up where they're going to. And, like, you know, tough if you don't like it, right? You lose. So, like it really doesn't matter what you prefer. Now, the other mistake that people make, and it, like, really falls under this whole thing with that reasoning that, you know, everybody has their preferred communication method. You know, a lot of the time, and I see this with, well, I guess all generations do this, but there's just a lot of generalizing when it comes to millennials. And maybe I'm a little protective of that group because, I mean, my last gig before I hung out my shingle, so to speak, and launched Castain Training Systems was like heading up a sales training program for millennials at a billion-dollar company. And before that, I spearheaded the team that brought in MTV and did the training there. So, you know, I'm just a little biased when it comes to it. And as a father of three millennials, I think that they get the shit end of the stick a lot. I think a lot of people generalize. And, you know, like they'll say things like, well, a millennial prefers email and text. And, you know, I mean, but you don't know that. I mean, you don't know that. I mean, the vast majority of them might, but I can think of several of my clients that when I send them an email, my phone rings and they want to talk it out. And, you know, their reason behind it is because it's a lot quicker than having a volley of emails and maybe misunderstanding things. And I think, you know, in that case, it's a much better way to communicate. Now, another generalization that, like, I've come across is the C-level doesn't like creative approaches. And I'll never forget, I lost, like, all respect for a very well-known author in, like, the sales circles. I mean, really, I had a tremendous amount of respect for this person until they came out with this, like, just so adamant. And they said that, like, the C-level doesn't like creative approaches. I mean, like how can you generalize like that? I mean, I almost wanted to say, but I didn't. Like, wow, congratulations, man. Like, how did you do it? How did you pull it off? You got, like, every C-level person in the world in the same room at the same time, and everybody concurred that, like, creative approaches suck and that they irritate them. Are you kidding me? How could you make that generalization? I mean, seriously, I mean, I can point to at least a dozen clients that I have today that are at the C level that I brought in because of creative approaches. And by the way, before you even think for a minute, I'm leaning toward that. Every single venue that I am preaching today, I can give you examples where I've brought clients in there. And not because I'm brilliant on those particular channels or platforms, it's because they resonated with the recipient. And I can also tell you that I probably wouldn't have those opportunities if I didn't say, all right, let's not make this about what I prefer, because I know what I prefer. Let's make it about what they want. And there's no way for me to know what they want until I dabble in a few different platforms and I see where I'm getting the traction. So if I'm sending out, like, a bunch of things to you and I'm trying a bunch of different ways, but I notice that you always respond to an email, or you always respond to me if, like, I hit you up on LinkedIn, or, like, you always accept my phone call if I call you, whatever it is, well, you know, there's a good chance that that's your preferred method. And the last generalization that I'll just, like use to beat up the point is that, you know, sometimes people will say, well, you know, the C-level loves persistence. And, like, I remember this example that was going around for a while about somebody who supposedly cold called somebody like 50 or 60 days in a row, like, straight. And that, you know, and therefore the C-level loves that persistence. I don't know about that. I mean, I don't know that I would generalize like that, because I can tell you right now, you wouldn't make it to 50 days with me. I would find that being a complete pain in the ass. Every freaking day you're gonna cold call me. I would be like, this guy has nothing else in their bag of tricks. You see that I'm not responding to you through phone. Like, why aren't you showing up somewhere else? I mean, it wouldn't take a rocket scientist for anyone. Honestly, I think it would take you about 3 minutes to realize that, like, where, like, I'm not answering my phone for you, but, like, I'm all over LinkedIn at any given time. I'm all over Twitter at any given time. And I'm answering people, and I'm responding to them, and I'm really into the interaction thing. I mean, seriously, it would take you 3 minutes to come to that conclusion, and it would be a much better conclusion than continuing to do something that's not working, all because you think that people who own businesses, they love persistence. I think, you know, there are some people who absolutely love that type of persistence, but I'm here to tell you there's an awful lot of us, and I do hang out with a good amount of small business owners like myself. I'm always hosting roundtable discussions. I'm in mastermind groups with other business owners. I have them as coaching clients. And when we're having different discussions, a lot of them tell me that the reason why they're not really big on selling is because they have these images of the people who have called them every freaking day, or they've emailed them every single day. So you can't make that kind of generalization. Let's go on to the fourth one now that I've beaten the hell out of that one. The fourth reason why I believe that a multi-channel prospecting approach is something that all of us should embrace is that multi-channel allows you, like, additional communication benefits. So let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. In fact, before I get into the examples, let me try to explain that a little better. What I mean by that, when I say it allows you additional communication benefits, if you think about it, every single channel has things that are almost like unique to the channel that allow you to communicate in a different way or show a different side of yourself. So, for example, if I communicated to you through video, right, and I can do that, right, you might be thinking, how could you use that as part of a prospecting approach? Well, if I wanted to be a little creative, couldn't I, like, burn a video of me addressing you by name, burn it onto a DVD, put it in a little kit with, like, popcorn and candy, and go to, like, the dollar store and get one of those, like, you know, like, tubs of popcorn and put all the candy and stuff in there and just, like, deliver it to you? Couldn't I do that, right? That could be, like, a way for me to stand out, because I really don't think you're going to say, oh, wow, that was really creative, Paul. Hey, do me a favor, Castain, could you put it in the pile of all the other tubs of popcorn and DVDs with people calling me by name? Like, that pile over there is a pile of all that kind of shit. Right? It's not going to happen. I'm promising you that. Like seriously, like I pretty much can tell you, you're going to be the only one that they might have ever received like that, because people just don't do that. Right? They're used to being another me too type of salesperson, showing up with the phone, showing up with email, and that's it. That's all they do. So, like, but video though, it allows you to see me. It allows you to hear me. I think it's a little harder to turn down a human being when you're kind of looking at, like, into their eyes, right? I could also bring a demo to you. I can't do that on the phone. I can bring a demo to you, especially, you know, like that 20,000 ton piece of equipment that might be a little awkward, like putting to the top of the car and like carting it to you, right? It might be a little bit awkward to do that, but I can also let you see something for yourself with the video. I could even sit there with a happy client and capture, like, that look on their face when we're doing, you know, the installation or the implementation or the launch, whatever you want to call it, right? I could do that. I could also give you a tour of a facility that, let's just say, like, here I am in New York, which I know is a shock because you'd never know I was from New York with this accent, right? I know people think I'm from the deep South and, like, you know, like Great Britain and all that shit, but no, New York. But, like, there you are, man. Maybe you're in, you know, like the UK, or you're in like Los Angeles or whatever. I can give you a tour, but, like, I'm not going to give you a tour because Castain Draining Systems conserves like consists of, like, this little, like, shithole room that I'm in right now. It's the upstairs of my house, and I probably wouldn't impress you. So I'm not going to do that. But just assume, imagine if I, like, had this amazing compound or whatever, I could take you on a tour. So I had to give that visual to you. I just didn't want you having the takeaway of he operates out of a shithole. That wouldn't work very, very well. But that's video. But what about email, right? Email allows me to share a link with you. Now, and or an attachment, but I obviously wouldn't do that unless you and I had had some back and forth and there's some level of trust, because with, you know, like all the viruses and stuff like that, I wouldn't do that in a cold email to you. But let's just say we've had some back and forth, right? There might be the trust level there. The other thing that I can do with an email is I can embed something into that email. Again, if we have a level of trust, I can embed that same email that I burned to the DVD. Instead of sending it to you, I could email it to you. Or one of the things that a lot of companies are starting to do now, and we teach it in the email course, and we actually teach it in the upcoming Rockstar Academy that I'm going to be talking about later in the podcast, but a lot of people are embedding pictures, right? So what, and I think it's a really creative thing that they do. So in the pictures, what they do, I want you to imagine this. You go to like Staples or something like that, and you pick up a small dry erase board, like, you know, big enough that like you could hold in your hands, like not like some giant board. I want you to picture something like what, like a foot and a half by a foot and a half or something like that, maybe a little less. And imagine on that dry erase board, imagine your name is Mary. And on that board, I'd like take a picture, have somebody take a picture of me, and it says, "Hi, Mary." Me holding that board, I'm smiling, I'm looking right at you. Now, I want you to think about emails. A lot of us read emails like scanning. Do you think that's going to like serve as kind of a speed bump? If you see something that has your name, which, by the way, from the time you were born, you were taught to respond to the sound of your own name. So there you are. You see that, you know, "Hi, Mary." And it's like, wow, what is this? What is this tomfoolery? Like, what is he up to, that rascal Castain? And it may get your attention. So I could do shit like that, where I can't do it with other venues. But the other thing that I can do through an email is that I can gently guide you by the hand and take you somewhere else. Like, for example, I could take you over through like a link, right? Over to my LinkedIn profile. I could maybe guide you over to like our group over on LinkedIn, or I could guide you over to the group that we have over on Facebook. I could guide you over to my Twitter profile. In my email, by the way, in the auto signature, I have a link that says click here to view my bio, because aren't you guys, and it's not just with thought leaders like what I'm trying to be here. I think with everyone, people buy you first. So like, unless you've got 10 minutes worth of experience, like why wouldn't you provide your bio like at a few different points in the sales cycle? So that's what email allows me to do. Let's go over to LinkedIn. LinkedIn allows me to demo my expertise. How? Well, in a lot of ways. I mean, first of all, my profile is my online resume. How about the content that I post over on LinkedIn? So it allows me to do that. But it also gives you the opportunity to observe me safely and anonymously from afar. That is something that I've noticed that has changed like dramatically over the last 10 years, is that we have almost like these anonymous like client, like potential clients out there who want to like observe us from afar. I mean, if you think I'm kidding, like, do you Google people? I do. Like, you want to see, like, you know, who is this person that I'm going to be meeting with, or this person that everybody's talking about, or whatever. And like, part of your research, many times when you're going in to see like a potential client, you're going to stop by their LinkedIn profile, right? Well, it works the other way too. I mean, do you think that you're the only one who does that? Like, salespeople have the exclusive rights on like Googling people? Well, you know, your potential clients are going to be doing that. But, you know, I was more talking more about like LinkedIn there, right? So there's some things that you could do there. There's even some other cool things that you can do on LinkedIn, by the way. There's a cool feature, and I think it's only on the mobile app. But if you go into your message center and you're connected with someone, you can send them a 60-second voice message. And it's kind of cool. I've been experimenting with it for a while. And it's been working out pretty well for me. So something for you to think about. But how about networking and trade shows as like a platform and a channel for you? Well, that allows you face-to-face time with people. Typically, just like LinkedIn, there's no gatekeepers there, right? I kind of missed that point before. Like with LinkedIn, no gatekeepers there. With like networking and trade shows, typically not a gatekeeper there. I mean, so you can kind of like have like a little meet and greet with people. Let's talk about Facebook. Again, many of you, you don't want to connect with prospects and clients or whatever it is. And I respect that. But I can actually show you things on Facebook that I really can't on LinkedIn. Like what? Well, like the fact that I'm a proud dad, right? Really can't talk a lot about that on LinkedIn, or you can have the LinkedIn police saying this is better suited for Facebook. And in many cases, they're right. The fact that I'm a musician, that I love camping and, you know, talking about cigars and like food and like I love cooking and things like that. Things to do like with this past holiday and pictures of me and my family that can help you bond with me, because it's not just about business. It's about the human being that's on the other end of that business. But also too, I just gave you examples that have to do with me. I also get the same opportunity to learn about you when we're connected over on Facebook. I get to see a side of you that really is not going to be shown over on LinkedIn. I could also learn things about you, both happy and, you know, the sad moments in your life, so that I can connect with you and I can bond with you and I can give you support. I mean, you know, when was the last time you heard of somebody talking about losing a loved one on LinkedIn? People that I'm connected with on Facebook, I'll learn that maybe they lost a parent. I've had people who have lost a child, have lost their significant other. And by the way, I had some, just, I'm sorry if this is like a tangent, but you know, I had someone a few years ago, I was just so sad for this woman. It was more than a few years ago, but I learned on Facebook that tragically, unexpectedly, her husband had passed away. And it had to be at least 5 to 6 years ago. And at this last holiday, I see a picture of her, and she's with a group of people, and she said, this is going to be my new family. You know, many of you know and many of you don't know, but you know, I'm going to be getting married again, and it's so nice to find happiness again in my life. And I never would have known that. I would never know of other people's hobbies and their travel adventures. And so, you know, I mean, I guess I'm not here to tell you that you have to do this and you have to do that. I bet you have enough of that in your life, but I am here to tell you that some of the choices you're making might be limiting you. And a lot of people say, well, you know, LinkedIn is strictly for personal. Well, first of all, the average person who's listening to my podcast, I doubt that you're at the phase of your life where you're going to bachelor and bachelorette parties, and that, you know, even if you're not, I can't imagine that you would have bad judgment and that you would be posting shit on Facebook that could get out, right? I mean, seriously, like you shouldn't be doing that, like especially all the security breaches and everything else that they've had. But my recommendation to you is this, is that if it really bothers you connecting in with like clients and prospects over on LinkedIn, I mean, think about like the different like privacy settings that they have. I mean, they don't have to see every single thing that you're doing. But again, I would go back to you and say, I mean, are you really posting things that are that bad? I think that might be it, like something else that you need to address. But enough of that. You know, and I'll give another example here, and I think it probably falls under the content channel. But I mean, podcasting, it gives me an opportunity right now, this podcast with you, to establish my expertise and bond with you. I get to be in your car or in your earbuds to 30 to 45 minutes. I want you to think about all the ways that you're trying to reach your clients and show me a way other than them granting you an appointment where you get what I have right now with you. Your undivided attention for 30 to 45 minutes, right? I mean, seriously, many of you, when like we have a chance to talk and you're considering me to be like your sales coach or come in and train your team, or maybe like you're thinking about buying some of my courses and we're having a conversation on the phone about it. So many of you tell me, hey, Paul, I got to tell you something. I feel like you're an old friend. You've been riding in my car with me for years. I mean, like I said before, this podcast has been around since 2010. And I know many of you have been listening to me for a long, long time. In fact, you know, I just want to ask something very, very selfish for a minute, because I'm just curious about this. It would absolutely make my day if, when you have a moment, if you would shoot me an email, Paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. Paul@yoursalesplaybook.com. And could you let me know how long you've been listening to me? Because that's just something, you know, I don't really care if you've been listening to me for a few weeks, new listener, right? First time caller, whatever. Or like you've been here like the whole time or whatever. I would just be very, very curious. I know many of you, you don't get to talk back and communicate back, but this would be a nice opportunity for us to kind of bond with each other. So let's move on to like the final two reasons, and then we'll start wrapping up. The other thing too, with a multi-channel approach, we can use each channel to set up and kind of like strengthen like your next communication. So let me give you several examples. So if I send you that embedded email that I mentioned before, right? And maybe it's like that picture with the small dry erase board, and your name happens to be Mary, right? This is not going to work if your name is Tom, because if I call you Mary, you're going to like want to knock my effing jaw loose. That's just how it works. I don't know if it's a Tom thing or like calling Mary. I don't know. Something about Mary. I don't know. Damn good movie, by the way, and I just caught it over the break. So, but anyway, so now I send you this embedded email, and I've got this dry erase board. There's like my bald like head and smiling face, a little note that says, "Hi, Mary." Now, at the end of that email, I mentioned the day and time that I'm going to be calling you, right? We call that in my classroom training, we call it the reverse call to action, because it's really the opposite of a typical call to action. A typical call to action is when, like, I ask you to do something, click here, or respond to this email, or, you know, act now. But in this case, I'm not asking you to do anything. I'm telling you that I'm going to be calling you such and such a day, such and such a time. And then what we always recommend is that you sprinkle a few potato chips in there to make them hungry. So the way I would do that is I might say, I'm going to be calling you on this day at that time because I have a few ideas that might help you with that product launch. Or, you know, Mary, I'm going to be calling you on January whatever at such and such a time because I have a few ideas that can help with all those like new sales rep positions that I noticed you guys have over on Indeed.com. Right? So again, I'm talking about something very specific to them. I'm getting their attention, but I'm setting up that call, right? Didn't I just set up the call? And it's two different channels now. So I'm setting up the next move. Or let me give you another example. What if we connect on LinkedIn and I send you a resource? I'm never spamming you. There's always like that value that people say, stop, you know, create value, give value. But they never tell you what the hell that is. But in this context, I'm sending you like stuff that's like useful to you, maybe some PDFs or a free checklist or whatever, inviting you into like my Facebook group that I have for free where you can share ideas with other aspiring sales rock stars like you and I. But then after a few weeks, I suggest a call for us to get to know each other. Didn't I just set up that phone call? I'm not calling you cold at this point. Right? So what if I call you now? This will be the third and final example because I want to beat the hell out of yet another point here. It's like, Castain's doing good, man, but he's beating the shit out of like every point. I liked him better in 2018. I like the old Uncle Paul better. I want him back. But anyway, so like, what if like I call you and I get your voicemail? I mean, that never happens that you call somebody to get a voicemail, right? But like on the voicemail, I could tell you to watch for a really cool FedEx, or I could let you know that I'm going to be in the area from 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. tomorrow, and I'm going to be stopping by with some really cool things for you that I think might be useful, and at the same time, I'd like to say the world's quickest hello. So again, I've set that move up. I think you're going to have a higher probability of coming out to meet and greet me, knowing ahead of time that like I didn't just like blindside you. I've already established that I just want to say a real quick hello, right? I don't want to sit there and think I'm going to actually have like a quality 3-hour meeting with you. No, just quick meet and greet. Have some cool stuff for you. The final reason that I have for you right now why multi-channel is so important, and this will be kind of the shortest, quickest, most briefest reason that I'll offer today, is that I really believe that it can help you establish the thing that I'm always talking about here, and that's propinquity. Propinquity is so important to us in life and especially in sales because, like, the definition of this, it's nearness, it's closeness, it means kinship. And, like, some of you right now, you might feel a nearness and a closeness and a kinship to me because I ride shotgun with you all the time. But imagine those of you who bump into me other places. And to me, that's where a lot of the magic with propinquity begins for us, is that, you know, like you hear me here, but then maybe you bump into me over on LinkedIn. Maybe you bump into me with the email blast that I send out. Maybe you bump into me over on Twitter. if you're somebody that, you know, you're with a company that I'm targeting, maybe you bump into me then with the phone calls that I make, right? And I do my cold calling, or, you know, like a different approach, maybe something creative or whatever. But it's in those moments when we're bumping into people, so long as in those moments when we're bumping into people, it's not weird and it's not spammy or salesy, I believe a bond is created. And the example that I always give is the example of the neighbor that you have. And it, like, there's different types of neighbors, but you know, like the one that, like, it's like a wave at the fence type of neighbor that, yeah, you just kind of know them for whatever. And it could be somebody that's been living there for years, or it could be somebody who just moved in, but you wave to them. And maybe they're out and they're walking the dog one time, and you do what Larry David refers to as a quick stop and chat. And, you know, you just kind of say, hey, nice day, or whatever it is. Oh, man, what a lovely dog. And, you know, here's my dog, Allie, and blah, 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 blah. And within minutes, everybody is on their way. And maybe another time, you run into them, like, over at, I don't know, the grocery store, at the Home Depot, whatever it is, and you do a quick stop and chat. Again, it's not weird. It's not awkward. It's not like you're sitting there. You know, like how in a conversation, sometimes in networking, like when you run out of things to say, like your head just kind of like does like the bobblehead move. Like, you don't say anything, but it's just kind of like the verbal of equivalent of like, yeah, so, right? This got weird. And maybe another time you're out to dinner with your significant other, and there's your neighbor, and maybe very quickly you say a quick hello and you introduce your significant other. You run into them at the movies or whatever, I don't know. Maybe at, like, you know, the adult bookstore, you run into them. In that case, you don't talk to them. That's really weird, right? Or, like, you know, if you're a guy, you run into them in the men's room. You don't talk to men in the men's room, right? You don't. Like, that's just, like, you don't do it. Don't do it. But you get my point. But the whole thing is, like, that's how you create propinquity, at least until we find a place where, like, you and I can hang out together, like we've done here. We have to experiment with those other places. But I will tell you that it's just such a great secret weapon to have. It fast forwards that whole know, like, and trust thing. In order to get to that know, like, and trust thing, I really believe that people have to bump into you a few times in a few different places, because it just kind of creates that familiarity. And there you have it, folks. Now, I want to leave you with a few tough questions. And again, hopefully your ego is still out of the car, out of the room. And if your ego came back, I mean, good time to just dismiss the ego again. And here are my questions for you. I mean, are you clinging to the communication channel that makes you most comfortable? I mean, do you have more than one? I mean, for most sales reps, I had mentioned it before, it's phone and it's email. It's usually the order of importance to them. It's usually email and then phone. More people are doing email and then it's phone. They really cling too tightly to that. Now, if you're only clinging to phone and email, I want you to think about why you're doing that. I mean, you might say, well, I'm getting results there. Okay, that's a good reason. But could you be getting additional results if you're bumping into people in places where they want to be bumped into? I mean, right? Is that a possibility? But part of the reason why we avoid new things, and I want to throw this at you, part of the reason why we avoid new things is because we just don't know how to embrace that new thing. So if all you know is the phone, and I'm saying that you should show up more on LinkedIn, but LinkedIn makes you uncomfortable because you really don't know how to do it, you're going to avoid LinkedIn. And the same thing, you know, goes like for those of you who are quite proficient on LinkedIn. If I say to you, hey, man, you should be picking up the phone and making more cold calls or warm calls or lukewarm calls or whatever you want to call them, the same thing goes for that. You might be avoiding it because it makes you uncomfortable. So here's something for you. And I mentioned it earlier that I was going to be saying this, so don't like act like you're shocked or whatever it is. But we have a program that's going to be launching like within the next few days. And it's all pre-recorded, which is cool because then you could go at your own pace. But I haven't launched a program in, I think the last time was almost 4 years ago. Everything that I've been doing has been webinars. And again, I think that kind of gets into the whole comfort zone thing that I was talking to you about. I mean, I know firsthand what that's like. We cling to the things that make us comfortable. For me, the thing that's made me comfortable for the last 4 years is doing a webinar every 2 weeks. I'm not going to be doing that in 2019. It's a lot of extra work for me when I do that. I would rather put out 1 to 2 quality programs a year rather than doing something every 2 weeks. It's going to free up a lot of time for me, and it's going to enable me to give you something at a much higher level. So what we're going to be doing is launching this Rockstar University program, and it's not $1 million, right? When I give you the link, you're going to see for yourself. And I've created this to help you, number one, get in front of more opportunities. I think there's not anybody listening to this right now that would say, yeah, I'm going to stop the podcast right now. I'm in front of way too many opportunities. We all could use more opportunities. The second thing that this program does is that it's going to help you take better control of the opportunities once you get them. And then last but not least, how you can close more of those opportunities. So get in front of more, take better control of the opportunities, and then get more of them across the finish line. Here is what the program is going to look like. In session number one, we're going to be talking about creating a really effective prospecting plan. Session two, 20 ways to find and create opportunities. Session three, meticulous pre-call planning. This one, I'm going to tell you right off the bat, I'm going to say you're welcome for that session. I've had so many people saying to me, hey, Paul, love your programs, but I really wish that you could give us a solid like 60 to 90 minutes on how to go about pre-call planning the right way. And you guys spoke, I listened. We have an entire session dedicated to it. And when I talk about pre-call planning, we're going to be talking about it from the context of both hunting for new business, as well as, okay, now you've got an opportunity. How should you do the pre-call planning, both research and preparation and just kind of anticipating things? Like, how can you go about that once you're in front of somebody? So we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about cold emails that get opened, read, and responded to. Session five, a cure for the common cold call. Session six, social selling tactics. Now, for those of you who don't know what social selling is, we're going to be talking about things like how to use like LinkedIn and personal branding and things like that. We're going to talk in session seven, how to network like a pro. Session eight, how to rock your referrals. That's another thing that a lot of salespeople totally avoid. Why? Because they feel weird asking their clients for referrals. I'm going to change all that. I'm going to show you an easy way. I'm going to teach you like what my dad taught me about referrals that like just changed my whole trajectory in sales, because just really changed how I went about it, made me a lot more comfortable. And everybody I teach this to, they're like, oh my gosh, man, that just really breaks it down in such a simple way. Session nine, how to get your dream client's attention. Because I mean, you got a lot of people that are trying to get your dream client's attention. And I don't want you showing up as another Me Too salesperson. I want to show you how to like stand out and use some of those creative ideas that I've been referring to. Most salespeople avoid creativity because either they feel like it's hokey or they just don't know what to do. I have a lot of ideas on that one. And by the way, the ideas that I'm going to share come right from the trenches. So it's not going to be just like my ideas. I'm going to show you what your peers are doing. And I'm going to reference some very specific examples for you guys to give a shot to. And it's not going to require like deep pockets that you need $1 million to do these ideas. These are all inexpensive, very, very doable ideas. We're going to talk in session 10 about creating a kick-ass prospecting cadence. A lot of you guys need help with this. How do I know that? Because I'm on the receiving end of a lot of the sales pitches where, you know, I'm getting like an email and then almost immediately I'm getting another email that's forwarded from the sent thing saying, you know, thoughts on this or whatever. So we're going to talk about how to create a much better cadence. And also, we're going to talk about kind of how to put the other ideas together. And we referenced that today on the podcast a little bit. We talked about how we can like use one like channel to strengthen the next touch. So in other words, if like I call you and I get voicemail, well, what can I leave on that voicemail to set up my next attempt to like have a conversation with you? So we'll talk about that in session 11. We're going to talk about how to take control of your meetings. We're going to talk about the questions you should be asking. I have a really cool template that I use at the beginning of meetings. And when I send you guys templates, I'm going to send them in Word doc form. And the reason why I'm going to do that is because I want you to like modify the hell out of these templates I'm going to be sending you. And by the way, there's going to be over 30 templates that I'm going to be sending. When I say over 30, quite frankly, don't hold me to this. I think it's actually going to be closer to 50. But let's see how that works out. But minimum of 30. As of today, there are 30. I think there's going to end up by being 50 plus. Next, we're going to talk about how to present your solutions with impact. Again, it's a noisy world. We have people that are highly distracted. How can you make the most impact? And how also can you create a dialogue with your prospects that's more resistant to skepticism and objections and just people being very, very skeptical, right? I mean, because I know this is going to shock you, but like some people just don't trust salespeople. I know, like somebody had to tell you and might as well be me. And then last but not least, we're going to talk about how to negotiate like a pro, because that's another thing that a lot of people in sales need to get better at, negotiation. So I'm going to like share with you some really powerful tactics and especially things that you have to be on the lookout for, because these are things that are being used against you. And as much as we have training, like this training right now that I'm talking about, you do understand that buyers go for training, right? They go. It's almost like, it reminds me a lot. You ever watch these shows on these people who used to like beat Vegas and like do all these like shady things, but now they work with the FBI and stuff, showing them all the tricks? Well, you have people that like just basically like who used to be in sales that now train people on the buyer side, like how to avoid a lot of the tactics that we use against them in a negotiation. So I'm going to show you the tactics that are going to be used against you and like how, like what the countermeasures are for them. There are going to be over 150 tactics that'll be shared. There'll be over 30 templates. There's going to be at least 13 PDFs that I'm going to be sharing. There will be 3 bonus ebooks. And you're also going to get email access to me to answer your course-related questions. And also, I'm going to be giving every participant personalized feedback on homework assignments, right? I mean, when was the last time you took an online course where the host was like giving you assignments and like giving you feedback? So all of these, again, are pre-recorded so you can go at your own pace. And I'm going to be sending them to you at a rate of like once a week, sometimes maybe twice a week. And it all starts 1 week from Monday is when we're going to launch. So you'll get the very first installment on January the 14th. So if you'd like to learn more about this, why don't you at least go and check out what I have to say? If you visit yoursalesplaybook.com/rockstar, right? Just like all one word, lowercase. yoursalesplaybook.com/rockstar, right? Guess you guys didn't know I could spell that good. But you know what? I will leave you with the final thought. I mean, a lot of people start off the new year and they're like full of this piss and vinegar. And really what they have, and they don't realize it, is just basically another year of doing the same old shit that they did the year before that just got them like okay results. If you really want to make some changes, you have to make some changes. Seriously, if you want things to like get better and you want to improve your circumstances, my advice to you would be to learn some new things. And this is an action-based course. So this is not going to be a bunch of philosophical nonsense. It's going to be things that you could actually implement like immediately. There is no sophistication about the training that I offer. Seriously, it's not going to be something that's like so deep that you have to like translate what I'm saying and then, you know, like you never get to it. So give it a shot. Visit yoursalesplaybook.com/rockstar. And with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them.